Welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich. This is a podcast all about the voices you hear on the radio and TV, the actors, producers, creators who focus on the most fascinating of instruments, the human voice. Now, I get a chance to introduce you to people I've worked with, people I've come to love as friends as well as colleagues. And one such individual is radio, stage, and screen performer Jerry Goodwin. Bostonians, you'll fondly remember his brilliant antics as the late-night jock on the legendary WBCN radio. Jerry was and always will be the Duke of Madness. He took radio theater, comedy, and rock and roll to brand new places. He had a successful career as a boss jock in many other markets, including Texas and Detroit, prior to coming home to Boston. After radio, it's been Jerry on stage in dozens of roles, from Shakespeare to Arthur Miller, and he's also appeared in numerous films and television projects as a character actor extraordinaire. You know, the guy who plays the cop, the judge, the evil mastermind, the kindly grandpa. Well, here's a taste of Jerry Goodwin, what he sounds like, starting with a clip from his old Duke of Madness days.
Forget our whole mole mill-wheeling vicocyclometer, a tetradimensional gazebo croticon, the mama lucha known to every schoolboy scandaler, be he Matty, Marky, Lukey, or John a Dunk, autokinetonetically pre-provided with a clapper-coupling smelting works ex-progressive process.
As sure as herself pits hen to paper,
and their scribing scrawled on eggs. In other words, history repeats itself.
Brought to you by Nat's Black Flaps.
Hey, Jack, catch those flaps. Some hot stuff, eh, Bub?
Wow, you bet, Pat.
And look how neat those tucks fold.
That's swift. How'd he get that?
Let's ask. Gee, Chuck, you wax those gaskets or what?
Heck no, sweets. It's Nat's patented flat black flaps. They lay flat, yet snap back under attack.
Oh, bet.
Hey, look, Flake, it's no flack. See that fat mask of gas over your gaskets?
Yeah, but I thought all cans had that.
Not quite, Pat. Note mine, not a mark. That's because Nat's flaps mask nasty deposits, fix loose silt, and just catch flecks of stuff you don't need.
That must cost lots.
Not so, mere cents per part. And Nat's flaps stack flat, store swell in car parks or mud flaps.
Well, Chuck, no more dreck for me.
And so slick at dips.
That's Nat's flat black flaps. Check it out.
And I'll get Nats with handcuffs at bus stops at office. Best call.
Hitler was tightening the noose around Britain. In the Atlantic, German U-boats were decimating Allied convoys. It was a dark hour, yet the British had resolve. And they had a new leader who was ready to fight back.
I am sorry, Oya gal, I really am. I wished you would have come on when I asked you to. I do. But you know, that's a good lesson on this life. Never can tell what'll happen to your chances. You gotta jump when you can move. You know, when you can move, you... Young people like yourself, don't have much in the way of opportunity in this world.
It wasn't until the turn of the 19th century that an English baron from the gloomy moors of Yorkshire conceived a flying machine with fixed wings.
Good morning, Boston. What's new? Show me the world today and put it all in perspective. Tell me what's going on in my neighborhood and keep me coming back game after game.
We all love a good ghost story. Join the 3 million theatergoers worldwide who've experienced the magical power of the Lady in Black.
Jerry Goodwin, we caught you for a moment off stage. That's rare, or not in front of a camera.
Yes, all of the above.
We have so much to talk about in so little time, but I'd like to start with the fact that you're from here, a Boston guy.
Yep.
And radio, you did radio in the South, you did it in Detroit, and then you came to Boston. Tell us a bit about the path.
I started my radio career in Biloxi, Mississippi, believe it or not, but I was stationed in the Air Force down there. That's what got me down there. And then got stationed in Amarillo, Texas, where I was discharged, got a job in a rock and roll station as Sam Hill. That was the name they gave me, Sam Hill.
How Texas of them.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
And so I actually started my radio career in Amarillo, Texas, then went down to Dallas, which was a whole other, ball game. And they gave me the name Danny Preston in Dallas. I don't know why. Jerry Goodwin's, I thought, is a really easy name.
Yeah, I remember it.
But for some reason or other, that's what they did in Texas radio. Yeah. They had different names. I think the idea being that they needed to maintain a personality for the ratings.
Right.
Because people, you know, if you kept changing a disc jockey.
Plus, if you left, another guy named Danny Preston
absolutely
would take over.
Exactly. In the case of Sam Hill, they had a woman to take over my, it was a morning show, and they called her Samantha.
Why not?
You know, so, but.
Danielle Preston, it could have been.
Exactly.
So from the South, though, you made it to the North to one of the great radio markets.
Oh, absolutely.
At the time, and even today, but at the time, Detroit.
This was the 60s. This was in the heyday of Motown. We had Motown artists showing up at our station, you know, on a weekly basis. You know, here you are with Marvin Gaye saying, "Marvin, how you doing?" You know, and Diane
Ross
and you know, and all of these wonderful, wonderful Motown artists would come by. The station I was at was WKNR called Keener 13. Mm-hmm. And that was the major, major rock and roll station in Detroit. Became the Beatles station, you know, when the Beatles came to town. So had a chance to be a part of that group that introduced the Beatles from the stage.
Didn't you recently have a reunion with some of those guys? You kept in touch with some of those guys from the way back.
We had our 50th reunion, and this has been, Jordan, maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, yeah. And we had everybody from the original staff, except for one guy, show up. It was wonderful. Mm. And it's interesting because the fellow that didn't show up, we could not find him. We couldn't, we went Facebook, we went this way and that way and asked for people, do you know Bill Phillips? And we just, he disappeared.
So never to be heard from again.
Never to be heard from again.
Radio is a big part of who you are. We'll get to the acting part and the voiceover part, but in Boston, people remember you quite well for actually a character you became.
That's right.
And it was perfect timing to develop this character at a station legendary in these parts known as WBCN.
Yep.
Tell me how you got the gig, first of all, and then we'll talk about the Duke of Madness.
Okay. I was in Detroit, did Detroit radio for about 12 years, went from the AM side to the dark side, as they call it.
The dark side.
Became a card-carrying hippie and started the FM, freeform format. In Detroit. Matter of fact, WABX was one of the first three with KSAN in San Francisco and BCN here in Boston, and ABX was sort of the Midwest, freeform station. So while there, I kind of started to develop the Duke of Madness character. And basically, it was theater of the mind. I grew up here in Boston and back in the 50s, you know, with
Bob and Ray.
Bob and Ray.
I knew you were going there.
There was also Jerry and Sky. I remember that, a couple of characters, but it was that idea.
Yeah.
Don Gillis had a thing called the Make-Believe Ballroom.
Mm.
And it was this wonderful, they would set up an atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And then play, you know, whatever was going on in that atmosphere. So I started to do the same thing when I was in Amarillo, Texas. I was doing a set of a jazz show, but I started doing the make-believe ballroom where I had the elevator come down and they would open up and I would say, "Oh, hey, come on in," you know, and then the elevator would go up and the door would open and you'd have a cocktail piano playing, and it was the club, you know. So it was this idea of creating this wonderful ambiance.
And it was nighttime radio.
Yes, yep.
When you did the Duke stuff, it was late. So I know they talk about the family hour, quote unquote, but you were able to push the envelope in the 70s.
It was absolutely. I didn't go on the air till 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, so the safe harbor was.
So as an actor, I mean, let's talk about acting. We'll bring it up to the present in a minute. Mm-hmm. But as an actor, it's a great medium to work in because it's all in your voice and in your imagination, and the listener then sees it.
That's
in
exactly
sense.
How I started my acting career. My theatrical career.
Right.
When I first came to Boston, I came as a PhD candidate, but that's another thing. I got back on the radio and at WCOZ doing the Hour of the Wolf matinee. And that is where we take these wonderful classics like No Exit, Waiting for Godot, you know, stuff like this, and actually make a 90-minute play of it. Then produce it with contemporary music, so kind of bring it up to date, And that is what we were doing on COZ. And I was using actors from then the Boston Shakespeare Company, Spiravolutus and Robert Desiderio and people like that. And used these guys to do the acting. And they were the ones that encouraged me to go on stage. I said, Jerry, you got to go on stage. You ought to do theater.
Right.
So that was very nice.
Now, we did focus a bit on the voice. And, of course, you have a tremendous voice. And it's years of experience being on the air. But then, as a voiceover artist, you've done countless projects, some of them with us here,
exactly.
with me. And at the time at BCN, was that when you started to develop that? Or was it earlier?
The voiceover stuff was earlier.
Okay.
I would say probably doing COZ, doing The Hour of the Wolf, mm-hmm. then I started doing character voices. And then from then, I started doing character voices for CD-ROM games.
Mm.
I did, I can't tell you how many in the early, early days of, and they were actually video, you know, this was before CDs.
You've come to a class or two or 10 that I've taught
with
Ken, my partner, and you've explained what it was like to do that kind of voice recording. Take us back to some of the, give us an example of a production and what it would entail back then.
Okay, go into a recording studio, you're in a little booth. I mean, seriously, a little closet-like booth. I did my very first one that I did was Alice Through the Looking Glass. And I did about, I don't know, 8 or 9 different characters for them. But they would say stuff like, okay, Jerry, we need a gate.
Gate.
A gate. I'm sorry. Yeah, we need a gate. And here's the lines, and I'd have to sit there and think, oh my God, what does a gate sound? What would a gate sound like? And so the whole idea of the creative process, that was where the fun was.
And the physicality as an actor, you're on stage, you're in front of a camera, you're using your whole body.
Yep.
You have to do that when you're creating these characters out of
most
whole
definitely,
cloth.
Most
right?
definitely. Yeah. For instance, to give you an example, they wanted Humpty Dumpty.
Oh, we all know Humpty Dumpty.
And so I had to think about Humpty Dumpty. First of all, he's an egg. And he's sitting on a wall. So it presented a precarious situation for him. So I was able to kind of do this kind of, you know, that kind of thing,
sure.
you know, being off balance and stuff like that. And of course, that kind of character was created on the spot.
Mm.
And the engineers and the producers were just, they would go nuts because you get in there and you're just trying out these different voices. I mean, seriously bouncing off walls just to try to get the voice. And so it was a lot of fun. And that's why they would just sit there.
And you'd have to retain that voice.
Oh,
if they liked it, they'd say, Jerry, bring us the gate again. Oh, my gosh. You've got to have a file cabinet in your brain.
Yes, exactly. And it turned out, I must say, often, would you play back the stuff that I did so I can find out where the gate is? Because, you know, they say, well, do that again. We'll do that again with a little more emphasis, a little less this, that, and the other. And so they said, okay, now do that one. And I say, which one?
Yeah.
You know, so it was always a case of having to go back.
Yeah, I've talked to others who work in animation, and we'll be featuring more of them. And it's true. You have to sometimes be reminded because there are subtle differences between voices when you have. And you've now morphed into one of the most at-work character guys, certainly in the Northeast, in Boston and beyond. It's almost the perfect transition for you of several years ago because you're doing exactly what you love to do, only this time we can see you doing it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the wonderful thing about it. I must say I've had the most fun on stage creating the various characters, most especially doing Shakespeare, which is not my forte.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had an opportunity to work with the Commonwealth Shakespeare Company that are just brilliant, brilliant Shakespearean actors. And I learned a lot from them, you know, how to do Shakespeare. I don't particularly care to do Shakespeare, but I do it. And I've done it, done 4 or 5 shows now.
Well, let's talk about the character actor as a role in general. And the fact is, most of us see those faces on TV and in film all the time. We see the recurring faces. There's been a documentary film about those guys, you know, who are they?
Yeah.
You've been working nonstop since you sort of got out of radio, and now you're doing more film than ever.
I know.
Film work.
Yeah, that's another thing. To be honest with you, Jordan, I am thoroughly convinced I am cast in film work because of my face. I mean, and I'm not. This is not disparaging at all, but I do have a face, and I am able to apparently create different characters with my face, because, you know, as I say, I get cast in these films, and there's always some kind of drama going on where I have to portray, you know, something with a face, you know, some kind of face, being a sad guy, being a, you know, happy guy, being a dying guy, that kind of thing.
You're not like, I always think of John Lithgow, who's got that face, but occasionally he'll do something very light and fluffy. You don't get to many light and fluffy things,
no,
Jerry.
I don't.
and you're a delightful guy. I know you've known you for 35 years.
See, I have two grandchildren that have never seen me only because the stuff that I do. I don't want to let them see me. I don't want to see blood and guts or, you know, that kind
now,
of
thing. Now, can you talk a little bit, though, about the modern production elements in terms of filmmaking? Because even in the years you've been doing it, which is not, you know, 50 years, you've seen some radical changes.
Everybody can be a filmmaker now, Jordan, because of this, you know, the size of the cameras now are, you know, handheld. The audio guy that all he needs is just a boom mic and that's it. And the equipment that he uses, you know, he carries around in with one hand. And so it's become so convenient now for people to be able to do films. You know that everybody's a voiceover artist now because you can set up your set up a studio at home.
Right.
So all of this, I've watched all of this stuff happen. And it's so easy to do now just because of the sizes of the equipment.
Jerry, do you think that your years of experience in various formats as a radio jock in at various times of the day and night has really been a boon in terms of your acting, that training, that discipline, if you will? I know people think disc jockeys are just all over the map. It's very disciplined work.
Has
that had that much of a positive impact on your acting?
I have to say yes to it, Jordan, only because I did radio for 40 years, for crying out loud, to create the various personalities. Well, listen, as Sam Hill, that was a personality. That was the morning show, ring the cowbell, wake up to Sam Hill, who the Sam Hill is, you know, that kind of thing. And then being the Duke of Mattis, which is an overnight type of thing, the much more subdued character, even though the stuff that I produced and voiced was pretty radical, you know.
Yeah.
And like you say, different. When I was in Detroit, I did afternoons, so that was a whole other kind of a keep your sunny side up kind of a character.
When you just mentioned it as a sort of a side comment that you were a PhD candidate, but we don't want to talk about that. But I happen to know you were a PhD candidate.
Yes.
I believe in religion and philosophy and things like that.
It was, it was social ethics.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to have your take on what an actor brings to any role from his world. I mean, you have such an interesting life quite frankly, a personal life, and we won't talk about this now, but a family life in which there's been struggle and challenge and violence, unfortunately, done to you as victims. But talk a little bit about what it just as you approach a role, so much is there already.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. I was thinking about this new project that I'm doing for caregivers, doing training films for caregivers. And of course, my role is the patient. And I've been a patient with diabetes. I've been a patient with cancer, a patient with a dementia. And you know, being able to bring forth whatever had gone on in my past has allowed me now to you know, be these characters and pull it off. Be very sincere with these characters. Yeah. I call it it's a rehearsal for my old age.
I've seen you in many productions on stage. One of my favorites was Dr. Jekyll. That's the way it's pronounced.
That's correct.
And Mr. Hyde.
That's correct.
And that was many years ago. Yep. And I remember how magical. It reminds me how magical theater is, where you can describe this. You played multiple characters.
That's
as did the cast. And how did we delineate between characters? Why don't you tell the story?
Well, it's costume, basically. But I must tell you the story that we were doing Dr. Jekyll, and it was the American premiere of a British production. So they decided to bring the British director over to direct our production. It was a four actors doing 16 characters. So we did about four characters a piece. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing about this is they decided that they wanted to set this particular production back in Edinburgh in Scotland, which is where Stevenson was from. Heretofore, it's always been done in London, as you know, mm-hmm. with the Dr. Jekyll and the London. But they wanted to bring it back to Scotland. So we went through this audition process. The longest I have ever done is over a month, but they needed four very distinct people with a great chemistry. So they worked very hard on getting the four of us together. And so we finally got cast. And then the director said, this wonderful, dear friends, now what I need from you is your Scottish accent. And we looked at each other as if, are you kidding me? Like we carry Scottish accents around in our back pocket. So the best we could do, man, was, hey, Captain, I can't get the engines going.
We don't have enough power in the reactors, Captain. The shields aren't going to take it.
That
right.
was the only
of course,
Scottish.
Of course.
And of course, that's
do?
James Doohan, who was a Canadian actor, doing a really bad Scottish
yes,
accent.
Exactly.
And the director, he just fell back, fell off his chairs laughing so yeah. hard. So what he did was he went back to England and got all his Scottish friends to record their voices and reading the script. So we had a chance to then really capture the sound of a Scottish accent.
I remember the show, and you mentioned costumes. Someone would, maybe you, would take a scarf and wrap it around
yep.
and become this other character.
Exactly.
So subtle and so beautifully staged.
I loved it because we did this. You could see us doing it.
Mm.
You know.
It was nothing hidden. And
we never got off stage. If we weren't in the scene, we just moved to the back of the stage. But you could see us, and then we would change a jacket or a hat or whatever. And then come back on as another character. The other thing we did, which is brilliant, was the sound effects, Jordan. We did all the sound effects. We had to...
That's right. I remember.
Yeah.
You talk about theater of the mind. You talk about old, almost like a radio show from the stage.
Yeah, no kidding.
That is really cool. The final question or comment from you, you were telling us about various shows that you've done recently. We get together regularly, Jerry mm-hmm. and I. And you were mentioning research and how much fun it is to learn about these characters, some of them historically accurate characters.
Yeah. The one that I did called Blood in the Snow was dealt with the Boston Massacre. And Harrison Gray was a real man. He was the treasurer of the Massachusetts province. So naturally, I needed to find out about him and just Googling, and then there are books and just trying to find out. And it turns out that this character, there was only a paragraph on him. I said, what's going on? And it gave us the basics that he was the treasurer of Massachusetts province. He had been the governor. He had this, that, and the other. And that's it. So I had to really create for myself a little more in-depth backstory.
But you learned so much about the event.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And the people who were alive at that time doing
absolutely.
What they needed to do to survive.
The playwright, his name is Patrick Garbridge, and award-winning. And it is so historically on point. And then, because I mentioned, and we also did it in the original council chamber of the Boston State House in full costume. So you know that would be a heady, heady time.
I'm not going to embarrass you by mentioning, unless you want to, mentioning your chronological age. But I will say this, you never change and you are having a ball. I know you are because you tell us often how much fun you're having.
You know, I will have a birthday next month. And I will be 81 years old.
Oh, get out of town. I was telling you about Harris Yulin, who's appearing in currently on Netflix as a character in Ozark. He's even older than you. And I just think we've come into a time, thankfully, when people on screen anyway are being recognized we're playing older characters. We're not dressing people up to be old.
Yeah, and graying their hair and putting the, you know, I can't stand seeing wrinkles that have been put on with a mascara brush or something.
Yeah, I mean, if it's high school, yes, I can understand. But after that. So I just want to say congratulations.
Thank you.
you're just going like a bat, and you're just having a great time. And
absolutely.
And audiences are as well, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
And how can people find out more if they want to read up? You have a site at newenglandactor.com, I know.
I have New England Actor, and I have a reel on there, and I have photos of the various productions that I've been in. And that's probably the most in-depth kind of a profile that I have.
Yes. So people can go to New England or neactor.com and search Jerry with a J, Goodwin. Great to see you, my friend.
You too, my friend.
Break many more of those wonderful legs.
That's the plan.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions, on the web at chartproductions.com. And please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on iTunes and most other podcast platforms. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.